This is West Virginia Morning on West Virginia Public Radio. I'm Beth Voorhees. Today, we continue our look into natural gas development in the state, but first, a correction. Yesterday, we reported that there are about 400 horizontal wells in West Virginia, when we should have said 400 horizontal well pads. The number of active horizontal wells, based on the most recent data, is actually over 1,300. Almost 4,000 have already been permitted, with more on the way. In fact, Lewis County residents will find out more tonight about CONSOL Energy's plan to expand oil and gas development in their area. The company is hosting a meeting in Weston to talk about its intentions. The prospect of hydraulic fracking in the area is prompting excitement, but also concerns, as Roxy Todd reports.
At the end of a 2.5-mile single-lane road sits LePay Herb Farm. Owner Myra Bonage Hale is a retired social worker in her 70s. She and her son Bill live here in a brightly painted purple homestead that dates back to the 1800s. It's even on the National Register of Historic Places. Myra grows a variety of herbs here, which she distills into essential oils.
This is an essential oil distillery, which also distills hydrosol. We distill lavender, peppermint, spearmint, Egyptian mint, basil.
Myra makes about $8,000 a year selling her herbal products and doing herbal workshops here on the farm. She lives in the unincorporated community of Alum Bridge, and she doesn't own her mineral rights. She's worried that she won't be able to keep energy companies from drilling for natural gas near her home.
I am terrified that I'm going to lose this farm to Marcellus Shale drilling.
To release gas from the Marcellus Shale rock formation, companies blast water and chemicals deep into the ground at high pressures. Myra's worried that at tonight's meeting, she and her family are going to find out that these types of hydraulic drilling well pads are coming to Alum Bridge. She's scared for her health, and she's worried that her well water and the air on her farm will be contaminated. She points to neighboring farms in Doddridge County, which has seen tremendous gas and oil development in the last few years.
They've had beautiful farms. They've got fracking pads next door. They've lost all their property value, and they can't move because there's nowhere to go. And that's very much going to happen in Lewis County.
Exactly what is going to happen in Lewis County, that's still unclear. CONSOL Energy did not agree to an interview in time for this story. But Lewis County Commission President Agnes Queen says she's been told most of the new development will be in the part of the county where Myra's farm is located.
We know that the one area of the community, they are anticipating 288 wells in the western end of Lewis County.
She says lots of citizens are excited that drilling could bring new jobs to Lewis County.
Many, many, many of our citizens currently work in the oil and gas industry but have to travel possibly to other states. A lot of those folks are excited because they think they'll be able to work at home for a while.
78-year-old Bob Shear lives just over the hill from Myra Bonage Hale's farm. He feels bad about her situation. But unlike her, he owns most of his mineral rights. He's benefited from 14 conventional gas wells on his property.
For the hydraulic fracturing, in my case, it could make me a fortune.
Still, Bob is not yet sure if he would welcome fracking operations on his land.
If it was in an out-of-the-way place where I didn't think it could ever contaminate my water system, I might be agreeable.
Back over the hollow at Myra's farm, Myra and her son Bill and her granddaughter Asia are out in the garden. 9-year-old Asia has discovered three tomatoes that she planted this spring.
Aren't they beautiful?
These are my tomatoes I grew. Myra fears this idyllic scene will be lost, along with her farm's customers, if hydraulic fracking comes to Alum Bridge.
And I just feel badly that I spent so much time so foolishly and grew to love something so much that we're all going to lose.
She and her son Bill both plan on attending the meeting tonight to hear from CONSOL. If fracking plans go ahead, Myra is considering buying property in Garrett County, Maryland. But she knows that even there, she might not be able to escape the development of natural gas drilling, which could include fracking in the future. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Roxy Todd in Alum Bridge.
The community meeting about gas and oil development in Lewis County will be in Weston this evening at 6 o'clock at Jackson's Mill. Tomorrow, a report from that meeting. This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:40. Some rain this morning, clearing this afternoon, temperatures in the 60s and 70s. Fog overnight with lows in the 40s and 50s, partly sunny on Wednesday with temperatures remaining in the 60s and 70s.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by the West Virginia Division of Rehabilitation Services, enabling and empowering workers with disabilities to meet business workforce needs. Visit WVDRS.org for employer services.
Are you a liberal or a conservative? When it comes to politics, Americans can often feel like the answer is black or white or red or blue. But the Pew Research Center is trying to change that notion with a quiz that asks, where do you fit in the political typology spectrum? Although it starts with a quiz that places you into one of eight typologies, the Pew Research Center is using its results to prove that political values in this country come in many shades and hues. Ashton Mara sat down with Jocelyn Kiley, an associate director of research with the Pew Center, who explains the process behind the quiz and what they're learning from it.
Let's start with the quiz itself. What were you all trying to accomplish?
So the quiz is based on a series of questions that we ask our survey respondents. And what we do is we ask 23 questions about political values on everything from attitudes about the social safety net to the size of government to immigration, environment. And we use that data to see if groups emerge that are based on political values. And then we group people together. And in the report, we detail the types of groups that we see. And then in a quiz, we ask you or your listeners to take the quiz and see where they end up on the political spectrum.
So can we talk about the process? How did you all come up with the questions that were included in the quiz?
Well, many of these questions are part of a long-standing set of questions that we at the Pew Research Center have been asking going back into the 1990s. And so we've been using those questions to do this sort of work since 1994 and even before then, and so that we can look at political attitudes over time. And so, but what we're looking for are questions that really span the set of political values that are part of American politics today that aren't specifically about policy issues. We're not asking in the quiz about your position on healthcare, for instance. We're asking about underlying political values that are associated with policy issues today.
So then at the end of this quiz, you're categorized into one of eight typologies that Pew has come up with. So can you explain how those eight groups differ from the plain liberal and conservative that the average American might think of?
Sure. Well, we have a tendency to see the world in terms of red and blue, Republican, Democrat, liberal, and conservative. And what we try to do here by asking about political values and using a statistical process, cluster analysis, to see how those values fall together is to look at whether, in fact, the world is more complicated. We all know people who have conservative values in one area. They might be they might favor small government, but also be liberal on some issues. For instance, they might be supportive of gay marriage. And those don't fit very neatly on a single spectrum, a liberal-conservative spectrum. And so what the typology quiz lets you do is state those preferences and see how you fall out. And one of the things that we find in these groups is that there's a lot of diversity in the middle. So when people talk about the middle of the American public, or sometimes people talk about independence, instead of just talking about the middle of the American public, you can see that while there are a lot of people in the middle, that the people in that middle part of the political spectrum, they don't all agree. Some of them might be, you know, conservative, as I say, on something like foreign policy, or they may take an activist position on foreign policy, coupled with a particular support for social safety net programs, whereas somebody else might take a more isolationist view of foreign policy, coupled with a lack of support for social safety net programs. And those people in traditional political research might end up in the same middle, and we can see that they're just as diverse as looking at conventional differences between liberals and conservatives.
So of these eight groups, there are two that I'm kind of particularly interested in, the young outsiders and the next generation left. Can you explain to me what those two categories are, kind of what those stand for?
Sure. So I'll start with the next generation left. This is a group that is, as its name might signal, left in its leaning. It's a fairly consistently Democratic voting group. It's one of the younger groups in our political typology. Actually, I think it might be the youngest of all of the groups. Very liberal on social issues, much like the solid liberal group, but they're a little bit less liberal when it comes to issues like the social safety net. So while they do vote consistently Democratic in some ways and on measures of what we call individualism, which is a kind of measure of whether you can do things on your own, it's hard work leads to success, they score higher than their liberal counterparts. The young outsiders are a really interesting group and new to our typology this year. They have a little bit of a Republican lean, but they are not consistently Republican by any stretch. They're very much in a lot of ways up for grabs. They're also a young group, and they have very conservative views when it comes to government size of the social safety net. So programs for the poor and needy tend not to be very supportive of those, look a lot like other conservative groups on those measures. But they're socially liberal. Or socially relatively liberal. They support gay marriage much more than other Republican groups. But they also have a environmental cast to them. So they're a very interesting group in a lot of ways. And one of the key things is they're not particularly happy with either Republicans or Democrats. And there's a lot to suggest that they don't really feel at home in either party. And it makes sense. They have a combination of values that don't really sit very well with either current party.
Both of these categories describe young voters, but do you think we can infer anything from these typologies about the future of our country's political makeup and where we're headed?
Well, I certainly think that one of the things that we can look at is that young people in general tend to be socially liberal. And it may not be that they're consistently liberal when it comes to other sets of values, but when it comes to issues, you know, particularly the issue of gay marriage, young people have kind of moved very steadily in the direction of favoring gay marriage. And so and we've seen a shift overall in the public on that, but it's been sharpest among the youngest. But there are still a fair number of young people who are skeptical of government. And so I think one of the questions we have is sort of where the Republican Party, where the conservative movement goes when it comes to the younger generations, and whether they grab on to some of these young outsiders on some of the issues that those groups don't feel quite at home with. I think the next generation left is a little bit more straightforward. In a lot of ways, they do have quite a lot in common with the solid liberals. And so it may be that where they diverge is actually interestingly on issues, some issues about racial and ethnic policy. So solid liberals, the slightly older liberal wing of the public, is the group that's most likely to see racial discrimination as a problem in society. Whereas, you know, one could argue that the next generation left perhaps has sort of sees those sorts of things as the public policy issues of the past, of their parents' generation, and maybe they have a new way of thinking about issues of race and ethnicity.
Jocelyn Kiley is the Associate Director of Research with the Pew Research Center. Jocelyn, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.